So exciting.
So exciting. So exciting that I'm going to say hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I am Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I am so happy to be here today, hanging out with two amazing people. Yeah, it's great
Where?
To be here. Oh, I'll let you know when they show up. And just, you know, I do not consider myself among that elite group. I'm just here. Ben, how are you doing today?
I am great, Jeff.
Awesome. Glad you're here. Ian, how are you? And welcome back.
I am fantastic. Glad to be back. It's been a month. Geez, illness, scheduling, and being in another country all sort of cooperated to make sure I wasn't here. I must say,
yes.
I did enjoy being in another country and presenting again in front of a live audience. That was much, much fun. Forgotten
see
what
people,
that was like to have real people around.
Yep. See people, we actually do have British people occasionally on the American Tech Network.
Right.
Like all good bits of technology, it was invented by a Brit.
Yeah, and then we did exactly what we do, and we followed
stole
your
it.
Lead and stole it. Yeah. Anyhow, it's great to see you back. And
thank you, my friend.
Yeah. Let's see. You're not seeing any of the other usuals here today because there's schedules in life get in the way. But
and
I'm going
crud.
To do our best to make it through the show. I will say that the level of beauty has gone down dramatically since Patrice can't be with us today.
Are you saying my whiskers are not beautiful?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's a level of beauty that goes above and beyond that we don't have today.
This is true.
Yeah. But we will do our best
to be as glam as possible.
Yeah. All right. Before we dive into news stories, I want to say, holy crap. Somehow Kyle figured out how to make it all still happen. And the Daily News show is
I
back.
Saw that. It's fantastic.
I am so excited. So everyone, I'm just going to tell you, I have no idea how much money we're bringing in right now, but we probably should be bringing in more. So everyone, let's throw some money at the Daily News show because we came that close to losing it. Actually, we did lose it and then got it back.
For like 24 hours.
Yeah. 24 hours.
That was a
oh, brilliant.
Long 24 hours, a sad 24 hours. There is a Patreon set up for that, and there's a link on the British Tech Network website. So, everyone, let's go throw some money at the Daily News show, and I am so happy that its death was only temporary. It got better. It is not dead yet. Anyhow, so Kyle, congratulations. So glad that you get to keep doing the show. And with that out of the way, who has the first news story?
Yeah, so there was kind of something going on yesterday in San Francisco.
Besides the parties?
Yes. Well, there were probably some parties directly related to this.
Well,
because
so.
you know how you know how geeks in the tech business like to get together.
They do. The geeks in the tech business are all about the open bars and the buffets at the parties for launch events.
Yeah,
yes.
I spent a week alone. I spent doing a launch event, and we had much parties. There was much food.
See?
Much free beer as well. I like that. That's always good, free beer.
That's wonderful. I miss those days.
Yep. So,
and
in the winter event, absolutely surprised nobody. Samsung has released the Samsung, well, that's rather redundant, the Galaxy S23, 23 Plus, and 23 Ultra.
That refers to the number of camera lenses?
Yes. Which kind of funny, on my Facebook, I had a friend who photoshopped one where the entire back was camera lenses. But they also introduced the new Galaxy Book laptops, including a new Galaxy Book Ultra, which has a lot of power and a little space. And they also teased their own mixed reality device to the press.
Teased. Of course they did.
Because they don't want to waste their time developing it. If someone says, that's a stupid idea, don't do that.
But my guess is that the reason they teased it is because of all of the rumors of Apple's device. So
yeah,
they want to try and be ahead of that that news wave. Yeah.
Yeah, so the new SmartBooks
rolled out a bunch of stuff. Or
announced
a bunch
of stuff. Yeah, the new SmartBooks look nice.
Oh, yeah, they look really nice.
Problem, you ought to run Windows on them, of course, but
yeah.
Yeah,
you can have Linux. You can have Linux,
Intel processors.
Mm-hmm.
Core i7 and Core i9. USB-C and USB-A.
They've always made good hardware. I mean, it has to be said that even in the laptop space, they've never been terrible stuff. It's always been solid sort of consumer-grade gear. It's always been good.
Yep. And from what I've seen in the press hands-on, everything here is highest quality. I do have to say, for the Galaxies at least, they are getting an exclusive higher clocked version of the Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 Hut Omaha for Galaxy Edition.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the stuff on these. I mean, they're impressive. Well, they always were an impressive spec, the Samsung phone. You could always guarantee you were going to get good hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do look very nice. I must admit, I ought to get, next time my work say to me, I can have a new phone, I might end up asking them to go give me an Android and I can have a play with, because my personal phone will always be an Apple one, but I can have one to at least see how Android looks now, this number of versions later, because it's been, eight or nine was the last release I was really playing with. And whether it, I'm presuming Samsung still put their own layer over the top of it, so you don't really see the underlying.
Yes, there is the Samsung One UI version 5.1.
Yeah, so I do see Samsungs occasionally, mostly when my dear mother-in-law has got a Samsung Galaxy, one of the entry-level ones. It gets thrust at me to help her sort of migrate from the old one to the new one. And things like I just press a few buttons and it seems perfectly nice. So, but on a day-to-day full-time using basis, I've no idea anymore on the. But they do look nice. They do look really nice hardware.
Yeah. I mean, if they look a little bit familiar, that's because they haven't changed the form factor at all.
I mean, it works for Apple, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they're
what works.
Yeah, exactly. How many things can you change on a candy bar?
Yeah. And also, when you think about mobile phones, have we got to the point now where it's an optimized design in terms of it's a square rectangle with a big screen? On the back of it, you're going to put cameras. What else can you do to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've pretty much maxed out on the screen sizes, I hope.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we've only got so big a pocket.
Yeah.
And I still think the folding type of tech, whether it's one with a crease or one with two screens on either side, like the old Microsoft units, I still think they're a gimmick rather than something that's going to go anywhere. Although the Flip is getting a lot of advertising over here in the UK. Yeah. The Flip device is really getting a lot of sort of TV advertising. We're really seeing that one being plugged as. And my old head goes Sony Ericsson whenever I see the Flips. I just think StarTax and Sony Ericsson. That was an old telephone, Ben, back in the old days when we used to have no screen on them. But they were mobile still, when you could flick it open and it looked cool.
Yeah, which is the one which I think might have been the biggest feature of this announcement, is that there is not a new Z Fold.
Is there not? Oh, I thought they would have. Because that, yeah. Like I say, that does, it's getting a lot of, as I said, in terms of general people, it's getting a lot of traction. I think the idea of, if you can fold that great big oblong in half to stick in your pocket, that's got a lot of appeal, not just for guys, but girls where they don't give them proper pockets in their trousers. Mm-hmm. And you actually want to be able to get a phone in your pocket. If it folds, that's much easier. But you still got 6 inches of screen as it folds down then to a 4-inch square or whatever. That's really, really convenient.
You know, yeah. The folding part that I've been seeing gaining traction isn't the foldable screen. It's just foldable phones, which is a fancy new way of saying flip phones.
Yeah, basically. The 90s are back.
Flip phone.
Yeah, the 90s are back. That's what it is. I mean, the kids in the street are wearing all sorts of horrible things that we used to wear in the 90s. The 90s are back.
Yes.
Yeah.
The 90s are back. And I'm looking, going, I went to a my son has a band and they have a gig, and I go to the gigs and I stand there in the back, sort of, because I'm roadie and whatever else. And I stand in the back and I'm going, I feel like I've just gone back 20 years in time, 30 years in time, and I'm back at a 90s pub. Sat in the bank with everybody dressed around me. It just looks the same. It's all the same kind of dress and everything. You think, oh, yeah, well, it's that wonderful thing of the world where it what goes around comes back again. Circular.
Sometimes it's wonderful. Sometimes it's not. I mean, we suffered through Zima so that no one would have to deal with that again. And now we have White Claw.
Oh,
all
God.
Of our pain was for nothing.
Zima?
Jeff.
Explain to the
Brit, because now I'm lost.
I think my face should.
There's a pain face there.
As I'm remembering the taste, imagine pretty much drinking rubbing alcohol, because it's kind of basically
what it was.
What if you turn 7-Up into malt liquor? That's what Zima is,
and took away the taste.
White Claw is.
Oh, that's like that's something that eventually over here can sometimes be called. Oh, no, that's cider. So it's not really. There's White Lightning,
definitely not.
Which is like which is tramp juice, basically the things you see all the street drinkers drinking on the park benches. But I suppose that kind of goes along with. Did Hooch must have come to the States, the alcoholic soft drinks. We had lemonade and we had Coca-Cola and various horrible-looking blue drinks and things that were, again, in the 90s, were a massively new thing. Instead of buying beer or spirits, you could get these, which were effectively a mixer with a shot of an alcohol with a mixer, and then it was lemonade flavour and bubblegum flavour and all sorts of other horrors. But if you search for Hooch, you'll see what I'm talking about. Same kind of thing. So, yeah, that will be coming back. And our other terror, of course, is a thing called a shell suit, which you may not have seen in the US. But if you ever watch British comedy and you've seen the shell suits, it's like a tracksuit.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Shiny, flammable material.
Yes, we had those here, too. They didn't call them shell suits. They weren't calling them track suits, not windbreakers, but we had the same thing. It just had a different name.
Leisure wear and sportswear, it says here. It, you can find it on Wikipedia, in Wiktionary, it's there.
Of course you can.
You can find everything.
Because everything's on Wikipedia.
It's all connected.
God.
But yeah, that's the particular thing that's also reappeared. I'm going, really? We didn't like, oh, Jesus, no one needs to wear that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the wonders.
That's the thing.
Mm.
Yep. Oh, Ben, do you want to go wait in the car again?
Oh, there it is. Refreshing citrus beverage. Ooh.
And when you read the label, it even says it's malt liquor. And it's an abomination. It's a violation of the Geneva Convention.
It looks it, to be honest. I'll give you that. It looks it. Yeah, it does. Again, it has the same It was the same market that Hooch was going for completely.
Mm-hmm.
Those 18 to 20 year olds, the ones that are just getting, I mean, again, 20 to 20 odd year olds for you guys, the younger drinker just getting into alcohol and things to drink and want something that didn't taste too horrid.
Oh, it was pretty much all 18 to 20 year olds.
Still good, good, good.
We had, so I'm in Colorado, really weird liquor laws. And so we had two versions of beer. One was called 6.0 and one was called 3.2. And it's percentage of alcohol by volume or by weight. Mm-hmm. Or, anyhow, it's basically the same thing, but you couldn't sell 6.0 beer in grocery stores. And well, actually in Colorado, you couldn't even sell wine or hard liquor in grocery stores. It was just 3.2 beer. And there was a time when the drinking age was 18, but it was just for 3.2 beer. And so we called those barley pops. And they had 3.2 bars, which was for the 18 to 20 crowd, because of 21, mm-hmm. then you could just have everything. So you can imagine how products like Zima as a 3.2 product could go over really well with teenagers mm-hmm. who can actually legally drink and they want options. So 3.2 beer, Zima, and lots of vomit.
Lots of vomit, yes.
Yeah. So anyhow, Samsung phones.
Samsung phones, and we got distracted. And when we get to my story, I might as well
get to your story, because I can't wait to see how we derail that.
Well, this one's derailed already. I mean, I'm in my ever increasing thing of talking about stories of technology is a broad church for our show, and so it's with sadness I learned that the 747 is coming to a production end.
Yeah, last one roll off the assembly line.
In the last week or two, I put an NY Times article in there that it's been around over half a century. It's been around for 30, 40, 50 years. It's one of the most widely used aeroplanes in the world. The queen of the skies. And at one point, it was still one of the most efficient, even with all the other new ones coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It was still one of the best aeroplanes ever designed. Fantastic piece of engineering. You know, I'm one of these things about some machines have got something about them that makes them more than just a machine, have a bit of soul about them. And I always thought the 747 was one of those kind of machines that had a bit of soul, a bit of something. It was one of those things that made the world shrink.
Yeah.
And it made it very accessible and very cheap for us to travel all over the place. And sadly, that's now there are big, wonderful new aeroplanes to take over from it, but just it's another one of those things. I mean, there's 6 million bits inside one of those planes and they get assembled.
Yeah, the sad thing for me about the 747 coming to an end is that I remember riding in a 747 when I was a kid. That was a special treat. It was like luxury in the sky.
Oh yeah.
And then compare that to what most flights are today, which is basically a bus with an engine taped to it. And
pretty much. And commercial stuff now is very commercial stuff on the budget side, because people don't want to pay very much to get in an aeroplane anymore, are very much a bus with wings. Mm-hmm. The flight I took across to Romania the other week was a bus with wings. I'm glad to see. I think the world is starting to get used to the idea that that's what they're getting. Because a lot of time people were outraged at how cheap and nasty these things were. But they're coming from memories of, as you were saying, Jeff, this luxurious travel experience in this beautiful modern, this beautiful designed aeroplane. Not some rattly old thing with really thin seats that were crammed into every last acre of the plane so they could maximize the the volume of people they could get inside it. You know, it's which is very much now what commercial air travel is all about.
Oh yeah.
How many bodies? How many bodies can I cram in this little metal tube and shoot it through the sky? You know.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that is why it's coming to an end. The 777X and the A350 are able to do it a lot more economically on two engines rather than the four engine. Yeah, 747.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I think they could probably count more people as well.
Yeah,
which again is important for that cost per dollar for the whole thing of running them.
Yeah,
I mean it's been around 50 years because they started out in 71. I mean, so it's over 50 years old.
Oh wow!
You also don't have to deal with elevators and stairs.
Mm. Oh yeah, because you don't have the yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the future is of the 777s and things. I've been in one of them. That gorgeous airplane. It's still wonderfully comfortable. It got me to the States when I came over.
777 is nice.
Yeah.
And the equivalent Airbus, I think we came back in one of them, and that was really nice as well. You know, it's really you can see where the future's going for all this kind of thing. But there was something romantic, something magical about those, and I'm probably sure the same for... I would like to take a flight in one of those old DCs as well, the ones from sort of those... Those ones that shrunk the world back in the 50s and 60s. And again, that romance of travel, which is really that kind of thing I'm talking about. You see, we are completely derided. I'm not talking about bits and bytes at all, but bits and mechanical, but it's technology. And it's how technology has grown. And the fascinating thing here is the thing that in the 70s we thought the future was, supersonic jets.
They're coming back.
They are coming back, I hope, but just didn't really get anywhere. We didn't really get Mach travel. I mean, I was... hoping when I got to an age that I could afford to go and buy myself a ticket for Concorde, I could actually get one. But I'm now hopeful for the new generation of supersonic travel. You know, that'd be wonderful. Yeah.
But I do have to say it is rather fitting that the last two 747s to enter service will be the pair of United States Air Force VC 25Bs, AKA the next Air Force One.
Oh, really? I must have missed that bit in the article. That's quite cool, then.
Yep. They're not the last ones off the line because they were actually purchased from a bankrupt Russian airline.
Oh, there's some right there.
But since they take so long to convert, they will be the last two to enter service. The last one that just rolled off the line will be entering service before they do.
Yeah. I mean, they're talking about these. A lot of these ones are going to be used as cargo now, is where it makes more sense, is the amount of stuff you can cram in the thing and use it as a cargo plane rather than as one for passengers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can cram a lot in there. You can put a space shuttle on top if you really want.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's another nice tech link. We did. We did it many a time, yeah. Putting space shuttles on top of those, yes.
I remember as a kid, my dad packing us all in the car and driving us into Denver. That's when we had the old airport, Stapleton International Airport. And flying the space shuttle from California back to Florida on the 747, it used so much fuel that you'd go from full to empty going from California to Denver. So they had to land in Denver, completely refuel the plane, and then take off again. So you couldn't even cross the country in a 747 with a space shuttle on its back.
So they probably had to refuel another time on the East Coast.
They probably did.
Yeah.
But the only one I cared about was Denver because we'd get to stand there, fingers through the chain link fence, looking out at the runway. Because at that point, where that airport was, it was built and it was neighborhoods all around it because Denver, when that airport was created, was a different place. Mm-hmm. So you'd stand at the end of a street in a neighborhood, and there'd be the fence for the airport, and 100 yards, 200 yards out, there'd be this airplane on the runway with a space shuttle on it. It was pretty cool.
That is very cool. Yeah. I'm looking at pictures of the new Denver airport, because I remembered there was if we want to derail stuff, the whole thing of conspiracy theories and the new Denver airport being the Illuminati and green men and everything else in between, just about.
Yeah, the whole underground tunnel network city thing.
Alien messages.
The secret bunker for the president in case of a meteor strike. The different occult things. And then, of course, you can't forget about Blucifer.
Blucifer, yeah. I'm just looking at a picture of Blucifer.
Oh, my God. And the,
was a 32-foot blue Mustang.
Yes, with glowing red eyes.
Yeah. And the murals are a bit wacky as well, aren't they? The ones inside the building. Some of those look a bit wacky.
The murals have been really interesting because what they did was they contracted people that came in, like I guess really well-known artists, and they were creating art that was a statement. And so it was like anti-racism statements, recognizing the atrocities that happened to Native Americans in the area, and so a lot of those paintings, murals, people would look at, and without context, they'd be like, okay, this is really weird. I don't understand what I'm looking at.
I'm looking at a couple of pictures now, and I'm going, what the hell is that all about?
And and so Blucifer, the artist that was hired to create that sculpture, there was controversy around that because apparently there was a whole nepotism sort of thing happening. And I have no idea if that's actually true or not, but I remember seeing stories about that. And when the sculpture was finished but hadn't been moved yet, it fell over and crushed and killed the artist.
Yeah, I'm just reading this here. It severed an artery and he bled to death, poor man.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's what greets you as you come to Jeppesen Terminal, which is the main terminal at Denver International Airport.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Apparently it's one of the four horsemen of apocalypse's horses. So there you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I do. I must admit, I do like the fact that there's also some posters there where clearly Denver Airport know about all of this and really making a bit of fun out of it, where they've got a green, little green man. They go, shh.
The airport plays into all of that because it's a great publicity.
It's a great bit of marketing. It's fantastic free marketing, isn't it?
Yeah, the tunnels are all there. I mean, that's no secret. That first, there's the tunnels that they needed to put in for the underground tram, the airport subway thing that gets you from the main concourse out to all of the gates. And then there's the whole system for the automated baggage system that was abandoned because it never worked. Millions and millions of dollars invested in this completely automated baggage system. So the bags come off the planes and then they go into these conveyor belts and tunnels, and then computers are scanning tags and codes and processing, and everything gets sent where it needs to go. When you check in, it gets tagged and processed and then goes out to the planes. And it was this whole underground system. So yeah, there's all this stuff for that too. And there were a lot of problems with building the airport. And anyhow, they're now in the process of a multi-year renovation to fix all of these problems that were created by the initial construction. It's loads of fun.
I bet it's awesome
trying to find your way around the main terminal now. It's like, well, I can see the other side, but I can't get to it. You have to go outside and go around. Anyhow, well, since it's three of us, I suppose I should do a story today.
Yeah.
Yes, you should. Even though I have more than one.
And my yeah, I've another is the like one another that I assumed,
which is that was one of them.
Yeah, we'll be fine. I mean, we've derailed on both stories so far. We'll derail here too. We're not going to get it anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So my story is one that that if Patrice or Tom were here today, there'd be enough of us that this would have been picked already. And this is the news that Twitter has just announced that they are turning their API. They've already blocked third-party app developers from using. They're turning this into a pay-to-use feature. So this gets shut down on or blocked. No, this gets put behind a paywall. There we go. Starting February 9th. So unlike what happened with app developers, where it happened and then a week later we finally get a retroactive explanation, which was a lie because then they had to change their rules to match what they had said. And anyhow, in this case, they're getting a week notice that, hey, this is turning into a paid feature. But not a lot of other information to go along with it. The assumption is that that unless you have a service where paying a lot of money to access the Twitter API makes sense, that it's just not going to get used. So that what that tells me is that all of these services out there that provide Twitter users with vision impairments or other types of impairments the ability to access the platform and access information, they're losing that. And it means all of the researchers that are gathering data about whatever, that's about to end. And then the services that let you log in with Twitter, most of those are probably not going to pay to use the service, which means that if you don't have an alternate way to log into whatever that service is, then you won't be able to get into your service. And giving the developers a week to gracefully transition away from logging in with Twitter to more traditional email and password or username and password. Yeah, right. Good luck with that. Anyhow, so hey, Space Karen, well done.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have your social network run by a man who doesn't understand it.
Yes.
Right.
And how long till Twitter does, how long before it implodes then? It's getting close, isn't it? I mean, this
not
is
not long.
Not long, is it? This has got to be the point when it starts to implode. If you're taking away a revenue stream by trying to charge for access to a part of your service,
yeah,
because it's crazy if you're going to restrict access to it on multiple levels. You're taking away your customers.
Yeah,
short-sighted, as far as I can see.
Yeah, because I mean, ironically, he's making the exact same stupid move that Netflix is.
Well, yes. Although it sounds like, and I'm being totally pedantic here, Netflix is making the same move that Twitter is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's been articles where they call out Netflix's CEO for praising Space Karen and the way he's handling Twitter and the decisions he's making, and yeah.
Yeah, they think it's going to get them all sorts of money. It's going to have the exact opposite reaction that they think it's going to.
You know, part of the problem here, and there are so many, part of the problem feeds, or you touched on already, Ben, which is Elon doesn't understand what Twitter is or has been.
Mm-hmm.
And he is making decisions that directly undermine the platform itself, and saying people need to pay for the API because they're just making money off of us for free. Well, they're not. I mean, some companies are making money through using the API, but it goes both ways. Because they're using mm-hmm. the API, their business is making Twitter more valuable for Twitter itself and for users. Cutting off all of that, well, that's you're not opening up new revenue streams. You're shutting down the revenue streams you already have.
Yeah. You're taking away, you're alienating your customers, and you're making them go, right, now I shan't bother anymore, I can't be asked. I've just searched this the Netflix thing, password sharing. Yeah, that's what they're going to try and get rid of, which will affect a lot of people.
It's also going to backfire for Twitter, or excuse me, Netflix, because there's a lot of people that have one account, but they use it in two places. Like people that travel a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe you have your home, and then you have the apartment that you stay at when you do your once a month travel for your company.
Or take another example that is less of a problem these days for us. But back in the day, both my son and my daughter, who are now my stepchildren, they go off to their dads. And so they've got logins for our Netflix, right, and they'll watch Netflix when they're there. So they're not in the primary location anymore, but they're still perfectly valid home users of that service.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think that could become an arse if they do decide to do mm-hmm. that.
And they actually did bring that up. It's like, tough, pay us more.
Yeah. Because that's what it'll be, won't it? As well, yeah, well, you might as well have the paid for tier then. Okay.
Yeah, we're in a phase right now where I think there's going to be a lot of upheaval in subscription services as companies experiment with different revenue models. Mm-hmm. And I think in many cases, those experiments are going to net results that are not what they had been hoping for.
Yeah. I mean, they always think that, oh, because it's a subscription model, we've got you hooked, you're going to stay, you'll put up with whatever changes we make. Whereas, but I mean, I know I've read a few things where there's a lot of people now sort of actively looking at their subscriptions. Do I need to pay for all of these things and binning the ones they don't?
Right.
Or so I think that a lot of the ones that make it more difficult to use their service or are starting to put unreasonable demands on them, well, I just don't need that anymore. I'll go Disney Plus, Paramount, whatever other one I feel like, you know, and that's that gone.
Yep. So. But Jeff, do you know what kind of subscription is definitely worth paying for?
Well, my guess is that there are many that are worth paying for, but the one that I would love people to pay for is TSO Hosts, because that's where you can do your web hosting, and they'll even help you buy domain names. And I have to say, Ben, you are such a wonderful Padawan. You are learning the smooth transition so well.
Such a link.
Nicely done. So here's the deal. TSO Hosts, they help people buy domain names. They provide web hosting, and they are very generously giving us what they do so that we can do what we do. They're giving us the server space we need so we can have a website for all of you to come visit. And they're giving us the storage space we need so that all of the show recordings are available so that you can watch or listen at your leisure. And they're also giving us the bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week. And without what they are doing, we would not be here. And that is not hyperbole. That's just a fact. Their generosity is allowing us to create shows for you and just to have the whole BTN family. So we really appreciate that. Now, what they're asking of us, super easy. Just go out on your favorite social network and let them know that you appreciate that that they're here supporting BTN. That's all they're asking. Now, if it turns out that you're ready to buy a domain name or set up a new website, hit them up, because they are going to be even more generous because you're a BTN fan. So what you do is get everything taken care of, and it's all in your cart at the TSO host website, and then use the discount code BTN20. And when you do that, you get 20% off your order. So thank you, TSO host, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And Patrice, will you help me with the tell people where the chat is?
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Patrice isn't here. All right. Let's see if we can make this happen. Holy crap. Okay. So we have a chat that that runs live with the show. And that's where we're dropping the links to the shows we're talking about when we do our cool things. All of that will be in there. And it's a great place where you can interact with us in real time while we're recording. So it's a great tool. And if you want to participate in that, you can go to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and you can log into the live chat from there. And then you can see all the things that we're saying, the things that everyone else that's participating live is saying. And like I said, you can get to all the links for everything that we talk about. Now, if it turns out that you're watching or listening later, since you can't do the live chat with us, well, that would be a problem. But it's all saved, so you can go and see everything that we were talking about, all of those links. And to do that, you go, I don't know, what is it, like britishtechnetwork.com/something? Help me out here, people.
Yes, it is britishtechnetwork.com/something.
Live.
Oh, come on, people. Help me out here. It's
Patrice, we're lost without you.
I think it's chat. Oh my god. You know.
You can go to if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/live, you can get to the page which has got our chat on it. If you scroll down the bottom, there's a button that says open chat room. You can click on that.
Oh my god.
And you can join the chat room.
Okay, I found the other thing. Patrice.
There's also Deets in there as well if you want to use.
I appreciate you. Okay, britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and you can see the amazingly cool calendar, and click on the day for the show. So like today would be Thursday, February 2nd, and then from there you can see the chat. Holy crap. People, this is one of the many reasons why I appreciate Patrice so much, because getting us through that was much more of an ordeal than it should have been.
Yeah, this is why we need adult supervision.
Definitely,
I always need adult supervision. If I'm left unsupervised, trouble happens. Yeah. All right. Well, with that done and out of the way, wow. Who has the first cool thing?
I will take the first cool thing. This is less a cool thing, but I never thought I'd see this kind of thing. So, Razer is kind of the king of gaming.
Oh, yeah.
And they make, yes, they make a lot of, shall we say, high-end, well, I just said that, but they have come out with the lightest gaming mouse ever made. It is the $280 Viper Mini Signature Edition, and it weighs less than 50 grams. And honestly, it looks kind of cool because it kind of looks like those exoskeletons on the original Westworld hosts, but in a mouse.
Oh, yeah, it does kind of have that look.
God's alive, you gamers, we must see you coming.
I was thinking 3D printed but super smooth.
Yeah.
God's alive, gamers. Really, as I said, they must see you coming.
Yeah.
Does it have flashy lights in it as well? I mean, that's extra gamer points for selling. Did it light up and shit like that? Oh, Jesus. $300 for a mouse.
Well, depends on the resolution and the refresh rate. I mean, the higher those numbers go, the higher your price tag goes. But yeah, wow. So Ben, how many have you ordered?
This many.
Yeah.
For Big those fan of you Zeno. That aren't watching and are only yeah. listening.
Yeah. Ben, yeah, I mean
none fingers.
Yes. Yeah. This my little Logitech MX Master Mini is about as far as I go for when it comes to price on mice, and it wasn't cheap, but that makes it look cheap.
Yeah, $280. Yeah, it better be a really good, super reliable mouse. I mean, it does look really cool.
It makes the 100 quid MX mouses look relatively inexpensive, and you think, well, that's the bad then, is it really, when you look at like a good one of the good MX mouses.
You know,
hopefully
the MX mice, you can't see the guts like you can on this one.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully why it's pwning noobs, it also makes you coffee.
Gotta make coffee, otherwise it's not worth having.
Yeah, it better also order food for me. Mm-hmm. It probably does. You know, it probably has sensors in there, and so it's measuring your calorie burns. And after you burn enough, it just auto orders a pizza for you.
Yeah. Then again,
Grubhub or DoorDash.
Then again, it's like it's Big Brothers. It could join with ChatGPT and start the robot revolution.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Ian, while you sat here and bagged on this $280 mouse, our soon-to-be robot overlords took note of that. So, I guess
I know we'll be first against the wall. Yeah, screwed. I know we'll be some of the first against the wall. I'm prepared for this. Yeah, it's fine. Well, I can cope with such things. It's all right.
I mean, at least you know.
Yeah. I'm not bothered.
All right. So, Ian, what's your cool thing?
My cool thing is just a really simple thing. And it's, best of all, it costs zero. $0. £0 and 0 pence. It's a superb little website created by a guy who got fed up with paywalls. And it's called 12-foot ladder. Basically, the idea is you show me a 10-foot paywall, I'll show you a 12-foot ladder. It's doing nothing illegal. All of the web pages that are behind the paywall generally use Google as their search engine. Therefore, the images and the data and everything that's on the site is cached. So if you paste in the URL that you're looking for into this website, it will show you that minus the paywall parts. So there's an article on New York Times, Washington Post. You want to read? There you go. Fantastic. That said, I am paying $3 a month to have New York Times because it is really good. But, you know, fantastic sort of facility if you just want to quickly jump onto something where you normally wouldn't go there, but you just want to get past the paywall. Fantastic, simple idea. All that, they just use the Google crawler cache.
That's
12foot.io.
How did I not know about this?
I only stumbled on it recently. And there's even you could also add a shortcut on iOS too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I typically don't need to look at content behind paywalls, you know, like New York Times articles or whatever. I just occasionally, though, there'll be something where I need to see part of a piece that's behind a paywall.
And that's perfect.
Wow. Yeah. Well, cool. All right.
So, yeah, I'm saving you money today. I'm not making you spend $300 on some random maps.
So, 12ft.io. 12ft.io.
Yep. 12-foot dio.
All right.
Links are in the chat. 12-foot dio, yeah.
All right.
You search for 12-foot and paywall, you'll find it.
That's, and I love that. Show me a 10-foot paywall and I'll show you a 12-foot ladder.
Yeah.
That's wonderfully clever. All right. So my cool thing, it turns out, ironically, it's on Netflix. it's a series that I just recently started watching, and I think it's new. And it's called Lockwood and Company, or Lockwood and Co. And it's based on a series of novels, which I'm assuming, just based on what I've seen so far, they're probably like in the young adult genre space. But the premise is, at some point, the problem started. And the problem is a euphemism for ghosts are now just like becoming an infestation. And if a ghost touches you, it will kill you. So it's sort of like, what if you had Ghostbusters, but it had to be this massive organization, and you needed people that were sensitive to I guess like the psychic energy from the ghosts, and teenagers and kids have the highest sensitivity, and as you get older you lose it. So these ghost hunters all have to be like teenagers and young adults. So I started watching it because I just needed something to watch while I was eating dinner one night. And I watched the first episode and I thought, you know, actually, I kind of like what they're doing with this. And I've watched most of the season. So it's actually a fun show and I'm enjoying it. So yeah, Lockwood and Company, and it's on Netflix. So and yes, Ben, who are you gonna call? Well, if the Ghostbusters aren't available, call Lockwood and Co.
But it actually sounds a lot like a mix between Shadowhunters and Ghost Wars.
And I haven't seen either of those.
It's based on some books. I was just having a look.
Yes, yes. Yep, there's a whole series of novels in the Lockwood & Co. series. And the author has
some good faces and stuff in there. So, you know.
Yeah, it's like an award-winning series. And he has other books that have won awards too. Apparently, like, really popular stuff.
Yeah, I'm just going to look, see if I've read any of his books.
So, yeah, the first season, the first couple episodes really do a nice job of setting up who these characters are, and the, you know, letting us know that not everyone is exactly who they appear to be, but we don't know, as you know, as the episodes start progressing, we don't know what some of these mysteries around the people really are and what sort of impact it's going to have on the relationships. And and then you have one character who shows up with tons of baggage from being treated very poorly in the whole ghost hunting space. And anyhow, it's a fun series. So if you're going into it expecting the most incredibly deep drama series ever, no, it's that's not what it is, but it is genuinely just a fun show, and it's written well, so it doesn't come across super cheesy. But
Joe Cornish was involved, and he's normally very good at creating stuff.
Yeah, well, there you go.
She's done quite a bit, so yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It'd be good.
Yeah, and the main characters, they're all great. So there you go, Lockwood and Co. on Netflix, and with that, we have somehow come back to the tracks just in time to pull into the station. And as the train starts to slow down, the first thing I'm supposed to say is, Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, funny you should ask that.
It is.
You can find me at my temporary website, raythigtech.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. You can also find me at Ben Raythig on your social media of choice.
Awesome. And I'm so glad you're here today.
Yes.
And well done on queuing up the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can now call me Segway Master.
Yes, well done. Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me mostly chat room, our Slack room on the Slack channel. I sometimes can be found in there. If I'm not there, look for me on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest place to find me. Look for Ian Grant and Veeam and you'll find me. That's the easiest place these days that people seem to catch up with me. I don't do much social media, to be honest. I'm a grumpy old fart. There is Facebook, that's more for family. That's more for family and things than anything else.
Ian, I'm picturing you setting up social media accounts and doing one post on all of them. Hey, you, get off my lawn. And then you just never back on again.
I think it's more a colleague of mine have realized we're quite like Waldorf and Statler on any company briefing. The pair of us are there on chat making grumpy noises at one another. We are becoming like Waldorf and Statler. There's no two ways about it.
That's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, glad you're back.
Thank all right.
You. People can find me on the various socials as Jay Gamut. And I haven't been back to Twitter since the third-party apps got dirt-napped by Elon. So if you see content there, it's only because until the 9th, it's auto-cross-posting from Instagram. And that'll be ending. So Instagram and Mastodon, that's where you'll find most of my social activity. As far as podcasts goes, on Tuesdays, most Tuesday evenings, Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner, that's his show. And then on Thursdays here on The Big Show, and then most Thursday evenings on In Touch with iOS, that's Dave Ginsberg's show. And then Fridays here again for The Mac Show. And then also on The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin. This is Thursday, so time flies. I think it was Monday of this week, which would have been, hold on, let me look at a calendar. That would have been January 30th. I was on Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast as a guest, and Ken Ray is hosting that show now. It's in good hands. So I get around. And with that, we have come to the end of another wild ride on what is this, Thursday? I don't even know what day it is anymore, people.
The day after tomorrow. Or the day after yesterday.
Right. It's okay. So since it's Thursday, it must be The Big Show. Thank you to both of you for being here. This has been so much fun. Thank you for helping me get through explaining how to find the chat for the show as well. That really was a group effort, and I would not have made it through that without you. Let's see. Everyone that's watching or listening live, thank you for being here and being part of the show. You are awesome. And everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later on, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. Shout out to TSO hosts for being here and supporting us. Also, thanks, Mueller, for making sure we have people for the shows every week. And Ian, we miss you. We love you. Looking forward to when you are able to join us for shows again. And don't forget to tune in next Thursday for The Big Show again. We also have the Mac Show tomorrow, so tune in for that. And everyone, have a great weekend.